And now the game where we invite notable people on to talk about obscure things, it's called Not My Job. Most people's image of rock stars is that of the handsome, long-haired sex god who wears tight leather pants, croons into a microphone, wails on his guitar. Well, one of the most successful American pop musicians of the last decade is actually a skinny, 40-ish bald guy with glasses from the New York suburbs. You have no idea how happy this makes me. Moby, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
So you know, I'm here for pretty much only one reason.
What is that, Moby?
Which is I want Carl to leave my answering machine message for me.
You do?
Yeah.
Would you then remix it in your classic way?
Why, that's a good segue into the remix that I actually did for you guys.
That's true. This is interesting because we feel that people know Moby's music even if they don't know it's Moby's music. So as a sample, just to show you his art as a great wizard of electronic music
I don't know if this falls into the art category.
Okay.
What this is on Wednesday, I was sent some clips from your show.
Yes.
And I was in a hotel room, and I was very hungover.
Yeah.
And so I started playing around with them, and I came up with this borderline unlistenable remix of the things that I was sent.
All right, here we go. So ladies and gentlemen, as an introduction to Moby's genius, here is the Moby version of the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me theme.
From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Kessel.
And then you say, President Bush, so excited to get to New York to the airport. He's a cop. He's a dude that's really like it. And you probably do one. And it's awful lot. And so here's what I want to find.
I feel like dancing. I think that's genius.
Did I mention that I was very hungover when that
You mentioned
happened?
That.
Oh, okay.
Or more to the point, you didn't need to. let me ask you about what you do.
Okay.
Now, you started out, if my understanding, as a kid from the burbs, as a punk musician. You were playing in a band in the classic way.
Yeah, actually, when I was very young, I played classical guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And I studied music theory, and then when I was 13, I heard The Clash for the first time, so I started playing in a punk rock band, which alienated all my friends from the classical music world.
Sure.
And then when I was around 18, I got into dance music, which alienated all of my friends from the punk rock world, right. Which has essentially left me a completely friendless adult. So thank you for inviting me on the show, because this is the only contact I'm actually going to have with real people today.
So what do you, I've always wondered about this. What exactly do you do? You sample music, you play music, you reprocess it. Is there a simple way of describing it?
See, in a perfect world, you know, earlier you referred to me, what was it? Like you said, I was the single least attractive person to ever make music. I have a photographic memory. I think that's what you said, right?
It's funny because I did not say that, but I did think it. It's amazing that you knew that. Anyway, you were saying.
So
you're the least attractive person ever make music.
In a perfect world, I would be a beautiful man with long hair, and I'd have a great singing voice, and I would stand on stage, and people would just sort of like marvel at my talent. That's not the case. So I have to overcompensate. And the way I did that is like by learning how to produce and engineer and play a lot of different instruments. And so when I make records, I'm not necessarily trying to showcase any talent or ability I have. I'm just trying to make music I want to listen to.
Now, I want to ask you about a couple of moments you had in the wider media. You famously had a feud with Eminem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was smart on my part.
That was
right?
Smart on your part. Well, you made Eminem mad.
I learned my lesson, which is in the future, if I'm going to have public feuds, it's not going to be with the most popular musician on the planet who's surrounded by people with guns. So future feuds, like it's going to be like, I don't know, find me some obscure indie rock band that no one's ever heard of,
right.
And I'll have a feud with the drummer.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Who hopefully will be a vegan pacifist.
Exactly. So you said something about his music or lyrics that he did not like.
I don't want to revisit it too much.
I don't think he listens to this show. I think you can say whatever you want.
I was kind of offended in the late 90s. It seems like there was this ubiquitous trend of misogyny and homophobia in popular culture, and I was offended by it. And
right.
I spoke up, and I said, just imagine if you had someone who wrote a song talking about killing blacks and Jews. They'd
right.
never get played on the radio. So I was like, well, then why is it okay to have songs about killing women and gay people? You know, it's still hate speech.
Right.
I just found it really disturbing that you had these commercial radio stations playing really loathsome, hateful records.
Right. And so he actually mentioned you in a song.
Yeah, and he dressed up like me in a video, which is probably the best press I've ever gotten.
Really?
Oh, yeah, without question. All of a sudden, like, all these, like, 13, 14-year-old kids in the suburbs knew who I was. Maybe not in the most positive way, but still, I'll take whatever attention I can get.
No such thing as bad publicity.
Yeah.
Before we go into the game, I did want to ask you a question. We have been, this is an ongoing project of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. We've had a number of notable musicians on the show, and we have all asked them the same question.
Oh, no.
And it's a question that we usually can anticipate the answer to. The question is, what, in your opinion, sir, is the sexiest instrument? Now, obviously, you know, we had Branford Marsalis. He chose the saxophone, you know. Al Yankovic, big surprise, picked the accordion. But when it came to you, we were like, what's he going to say? A MacBook Pro? We have no idea. Mm-hmm. So what, Moby, in your opinion,
is the
sexiest instrument to play?
The sexiest instrument?
Yes.
I'm going to go with the bass guitar.
Wait a minute.
The electric bass guitar, because it's the most confident instrument. Like, mm-hmm. if you look at bands, it's always like the singers and the guitar players who are in rehab and throwing televisions out windows.
Yeah.
The bass player, they're just confident. They're calm. They stand there because they're always the loudest, and no one ever tells them to turn down.
Right.
And they can drown everybody out. So I'm going to go with the confidence of the humble electric bass guitar.
In your experience,
yes,
traveling around the country, playing music, knowing musicians, do the bass guitarists get a lot of chicks?
Well, the thing is, because I play a lot of instruments. So I play guitar, I play drums, I play keyboards, I play bass. I have to say, whenever I play bass, I mean, as a small, physically challenged white guy, when I play the bass, I feel slightly sexy.
All right. Slightly. Moby, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling...
You are the most legendary flop in Broadway history.
Namely, you are, in this case, Moose Murders, a play that closed on its opening night 25 years ago. Now, there's going to be a commemorative one-night-only staging of the infamous play at Sardi's Restaurant in New York later this year, so we thought we would chip into the festivities by asking you three questions about this infamous disaster. Answer two questions correctly, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice, on their home answering machine. Corva, who is Moby playing for?
Peter, he's playing for Kaylee Bradford of East Lansing, Michigan.
All right. Ready to go?
Okay.
Here we go.
By the way, preemptively, Kaylee, whoever you are,
yes.
I'm sure you're a very nice person. I'm sorry that I'm representing you because I'm going to do a terrible job. I know it. I'm having a panic attack. So I don't have any Ativan.
You are so not a rock star. It's so funny. All right. The play itself. First question is about the play itself. Moose Murders is a mystery farce about murders committed in an upstate New York vacation lodge. The action of the play...
Oh, involving moose.
Involving a moose. Yeah. The action of the play climaxes when what happens? Is it A, the murder victim who's been lying on the floor for the entire second act wakes up, announces she's just fainted, and everybody has a big laugh? Curtain. Is it B, a man entirely wrapped in bandages from head to toe rises from his wheelchair to kick a person dressed as a moose in the crotch? Or C, an actual live moose is led on stage and points its antlers at one of the characters who then admits his guilt?
I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with A, the murder victim who's been lying on the floor just gets up, ha-ha, just fainted. Actually, the answer was B, the man in the wheelchair. The man in the wheelchair, the character was named Stanley Holloway. He was a paralyzed tycoon. And the guy in the moose suit is, I think, a character named Joe Buffalo Dance, fake Indian proprietor of the hotel. Why he is dressed in a moose suit and kicked in the crotch, I cannot tell you.
How does the paralyzed guy kick somebody in the crotch?
Well, that was the point. He's been paralyzed the whole play, but apparently some instinct or...
See, it's not a good play.
No, that's the whole point. Very wise, Kieran. Very wise. All right. Next question is about the performance itself. Theater critic John Simon said it wasn't just the play that made Moose Murders, quote, as close as I ever hoped to get to the bottomless pit. No. It was also what? A, the guy in the front row who came to the play 20 minutes late and completely covered in vomit. B, the playwright who sat behind him and kept laughing loudly and alone at all the bad jokes. Or C, the clumsy product placements in the script that were put in by the desperate producers.
In the interest of consistency, I'll go with A.
You're going to go with A. You're right. It was, in fact, the guy... covered in vomit. Simon wrote, quote, he smelled so bad that he sent three nearby critics and their companions scurrying for the back of the theater. Okay, this is very exciting. You've got one right with one to go. You get this correct, you win it all. Here we go. Finally, we come to the best part of the Moose Murders saga, the reviews. Which of these was actually said about Moose Murders by critic Brendan Gill of The New Yorker? Was it A, it would insult the intelligence of an audience consisting entirely of amoebas? Was it B, Moose Murders is the worst thing created by human ingenuity since mustard gas? Or was it C, in the first act you pray for intermission, in the second act you pray for your own quick death?
I'm going to go with C.
You're going to go with C, in the first act you pray for intermission, in the second act you pray for your own quick death. I'm afraid to say it was A.
Really?
Yes, he said it would insult the intelligence of an audience consisting entirely of amoebas. So, Korva, how did Moby do in our quiz?
Moby had one correct answer.
Oh.
So he doesn't win the prize for Kaylee Bradford of East Lansing, Michigan.
Can I... Okay, as a crummy consolation prize, can I call her and leave a message on her answering machine?
I think I'll be up to her. Moby's new album, Last Night, is out now, but what we think is his masterwork, his reworking of the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me theme song, is now available for your listening pleasure on our website, waitwait.npr.org. Moby, thank you so much for being here with us and playing our game. Moby, ladies and gentlemen. NPR.